As a quick reminder, what are those 20 amino acids? I'll show them. And I comment on things which are going to be essential. Well, first notation, these are chemical formulas, these are full names of those amino acids, and these are abbreviations used normally. I will use the three-letter abbreviations and one-letter notation. They all different. There are more complex, less complex. These are, say, if not counting hydrogen atoms, then these are two-atom amino acids, while that one is, I guess, nine or so. So there are large, there are small. This lists all charged or polar amino acids. These are full charge amino acids, lysine, arginine, glutamic, aspartic, histidine, while others are partial charges, just a concentration of fractional charges on various atoms. And there are non-polar amino acids, frequently called hydrophobic. Which the smallest are glycine and alanine. They all are made the same way with a peptide unit, which is then connected in the long polypeptide chain with side residues in red. So the glycine has its simplest possible residues, just hydrogen. Alanine is a methyl group simply. And here again you see a spectrum of molecules from no extra atoms at all to 10 atoms in tryptophan. Proline is special, but we wouldn't need it. It comes not from C-alpha. It closes nitrogen and carbon. It's exceptional. And it signals a break in a polypeptide chain. Though, interestingly, that break does not interfere with alpha helix formation, and proline could be accommodated in alpha helix. And this is a triplet code. There are several theories about how the amino acids came about in what order. Of course, these are all speculations. However, many of them are pretty interesting speculations. For example, if you look at the table, you see that leucine is encoded by six amino acids, serine by six amino acids, six triplets, arginine by six triplets. Others are by four triplets, isoleucine by three triplets. This set of amino acids are encoded by two triplets each. And finally, methionine and tryptophan are encoded by only one triplet. So, for example, Tom Jukes' idea was that in the beginning, when the whole table was available, so the very first amino acids could enjoy any selection of triplets. And so leucine, serine, and arginine did. And according to the speculation of Jukes, this was the first amino acids. Next, those which occupy four triplets, they could not enjoy that large spectrum. And of course, the latest, tryptophan and methionine. Methionine actually apparently borrowed the triplet from isoleucine. And tryptophan used one of termination codons. So there is no choice anymore. So this is one theory. Another theory about origin of... Yeah?
Why should the most degenerate position be the third codon?
Why most degenerate is the third codon? One answer is that perhaps originally at the stage earlier to the triplet code, the code was doublet. And then it had to become and had to become triplet by adding extra letter, which didn't have a load in the beginning and apparently doesn't have much of a load to the end. Another theory is by Eigen, who says that the very first triplets got to be of the structure RNY, which is R is purine for adenine and guanine, and Y is pyrimidine for cytosine and uracil. And the idea is that when you have RNY in one strand and RNY in another strand, then RNY always make is a good or acceptable base pair. So that you essentially have, although not perfect, but Watson-Crick base pairs that would keep two complementary messages together. So speculation of Eigen was that the original messages were in form of duplexes, so that both strands were coding. So R and Y triplets would be all here, upper pairs of every quartet here would be R and Y, and therefore the first amino acids would be isoleucine, threonine, aspargine, serine, valine, alanine, aspartic, and glycine. That was a speculation of Eigen. Crick speculated that there rather should be RRY, that is, both first letters would be purines, and this then would make this four quartets. And there are plenty of other theories about the triplet code. Everybody actually was looking for symmetry in that code. This is a nice symmetrical way to show it, but also to hide asymmetry, which is plenty. This 6, 4, 3, 2, 1 doesn't fit to any possible symmetrical scheme, although there are some attempts to build algebraic schemes which would have some symmetry still with violations. So there are some simple considerations which would indicate which amino acids were the first ones. And one of them was experiments of the type of Miller. This is the output of Miller's famous Miller's experiment, which was conducted first in 1953 and then repeated many times with better and better resolution. So the classical 10 amino acids of the Miller's mix are glycine, alanine, according to the yield, they are roughly grouped by yield, glycine, alanine, valine, leucine, isoleucine, proline, aspartic, glutamic, serine, and threonine. It's natural to believe that if chemistry allows that, then perhaps living species, early living species, would utilize first what is already available. So one could speculate then that the first amino acids utilized would be alanine, glycine, and so forth, according to the presence, the concentration in the medium. One more simple thought about order of appearance of amino acids would be just by chemical simplicity. Indeed, it would be strange if such complex amino acids like histidine, phenylalanine would appear first. Much more natural to expect that glycine, alanine, valine, serine would appear first because they are two, three atoms only. So if you count the weight of amino acids in just non-hydrogen atoms, then you see the following order of amino acids. So according to this simple hypothesis, the glycine and alanine would be first, and serine, cysteine, proline, and so forth, and tyrosine, tryptophan would be the last. This is pretty simple thought, should correlate with the Miller's experiment, because after all, chemistry also doesn't make right away very complex molecules. Perhaps it starts, although there are exceptions, it depends on the nature of reactions and nature of ingredients present. It may synthesize long chains right away in special conditions. But other things considered equal, that would be an expectation. that simple would be first. Now, one more way to evaluate which amino acids were the first is to look what are those amino acyl tRNA synthetases which serve these amino acids. I want to stress that almost in none of modern textbooks it says clearly where the translation process happens from one language to another language. It happens on amino acyl tRNA synthetases, not on the ribosome. Ribosome is just rewriting the same message from one strand to another strand of RNA, or rereading it from strand to strand. tRNA anticodon makes duplex with a codon. You have a duplex. It's not different alphabet. So the translation is on the synthetase. Synthetase is able to recognize simultaneously a specific amino acid and a unique transfer RNA for that amino acid, which happened to have also a triplet complementary to the triplet in messenger RNA. It is designed this way. So the reading codon table is done by amino acyl tRNA synthetase. There is a very specific set of rules for recognition of specific tRNAs. Almost every tRNA has its own amino acyl tRNA synthetase. And the recognition is unique, almost no mistakes. And similarly, the same synthetase recognizes only one amino acid of 20. And then it brings them together and makes a covalent complex tRNA with amino acid.
But does the synthetase recognize the anticodon?
No. It recognizes tRNA.
Something else about it.
Something else in tRNA. All tRNA sequences are different. And details of the structure are also different. Right, some use, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Question, you have the word almost in one of those sentences where you said that that this recognition is almost, that each, I forget which sentence.
Well, this almost is actually in the basis of life, because you cannot define the life mathematically. Uh-huh. Whatever definition you design, it will be almost. Uh-huh. It will be always right. Almost. There are all kinds of exceptions
right.
All the time. No, this would be too much specialized, and I can assure you there would be much more sophisticated things in front of us. So let's not waste time. As to the almost, if you try to define a Homo sapiens, you perhaps end with a full genome, and it's not a definition, because you cannot live without E. coli. You have to give a full genome of E. coli, and so on, and so on, and so forth. That is almost, yeah?
Do you have any information on the phylogenetic relationships among these synthetases? Is there any information remaining?
There are many interesting phylogenetic relationships. And not to deviate from the main course, let's stay with only subdivision of synthetases in two classes. There are two classes of synthetases. Amazingly, they're doing the same thing. They recognize tRNA and amino acid and put them together. But if you look at the sequences of these enzymes, you see that the sequences are utterly different. So one class is recognizably of the same type of sequence, and another class of a different type of sequences. So clearly, these two enzymes or two classes of enzymes have a different origin time-wise. So the speculation is by molecular evolutionists that synthetase specifically of class 2 is a more ancient synthetase. And therefore, there are all reasons to believe that the amino acids served by this synthetase also are largely more ancient. Although there is a swapping, it is documented, there is a swapping. Sometimes synthetase works with modern amino acids, though you expected it to work with the ancient one. But there is no reason to swap all of them. at once. So still it's expected that majority of them still be old. Yeah?
What's the evidence that class 2 synthetases are older than class 1?
The evidence is only of the same kind which I presented. Namely, that these are simple amino acids. They are synthesized in the Miller's mix. These are very insisting motifs in all reasoning. So this is main reason to believe that they are more ancient. Perhaps if you dig in molecular clocks and go look for ancestors, perhaps synthetase 2 goes deeper, but that I don't know. So these are 10 amino acids. The 10 of them are served by class 2 and 10 by class 1. And there's 10 alanine, asparagine, aspartic, glycine, and so forth. Now I draw your attention to these little dots, which also appeared in the previous schemes. These dots mean that those lists which I showed, this is third list, have these amino acids in common. Well, 6 amino acids belong to simplest molecules. 6 amino acids, same 6 belong to synthetase 2 served amino acids and to Miller's mix. So one could think that perhaps these 6 indeed were the earliest. Now, I listed to you only a handful of different ideas and theories about possible chronology of amino acids. If you build on that, the immediate reaction would be, well, didn't you use the Hartmann theory? No, I didn't. All right, your data are biased. So in order to be objective, I had to collect all possible speculations, including outrageously wrong ones. And I had no right to qualify them like that. I included them in the paper, all of them, without qualifying which is wrong, which is right. If you trace carefully the correlations table and so forth, you find out which ones are wrong, but I'm not claiming that. So I collected 44 different criteria for amino acid chronology. These are roughly half of them, 20-some, are different theories. And another half are simple factors. Like I mentioned, I could mention also, say, chemical inertness would be important factor. Like by simplicity, cysteine would be the next. But cysteine is highly reactive. It's improbable to have a cysteine one of the first because it will be reacted out. So chemical inertness then would be a good factor. The most inert amino acids would come first, or most stable chemically would come first. So all these considerations put together make 44 different criteria of amino acid for amino acid chronology. Yeah?
Can I ask why some have to come before? Why is there a first? Why do we know that some came before the other? I mean, are you supposing that there was a time when there was a genetic code but there were fewer amino acids?
Well, I'm not assuming anything. I'm only taking a common belief or believer majority that amino acids did not appear all together, 20 of amino acids on the evolutionary scene. There was some which appeared earlier. Only that. I have no other assumptions.
But maybe some appeared earlier, but are you actually saying that there was a genetic code at that time?
I don't know. I don't know. The question is, what would be a possible order of appearance of amino acids, of natural 20 amino acids on evolutionary scene, irrespective of presence or absence of the code? Some theories are based on the code, some are not. Yeah?
I'm through those, all of them, that whole list quick enough, but do any of these theories include the idea that maybe the original amino acids would have tried to cover a diversity, a sort of a broad diversity of physical chemical parameters, and then later ones would sort of fill in flexibility and things like that?
No, that parameter is not there, diversity. I would be happy if somebody would suggest the ranking by diversity, which I will include immediately, no matter whether it's good or bad. Well, as an anecdote, As an anecdote, I tell you a story. When I had just about, 25 criteria, I was giving a talk in MIT. And I said that I have no reason to believe that, say, theory of Crick is any smarter than theory of Hartmann. And then somebody in the audience said, could you tell me what is the criterion number 14? I said, well, it's a hypothesis of Hartmann. And he said, I'm Hartmann. there is the algebraic model of Hornos and Hornos. There is a nearly algebraic model of Jimenez-Montana. That one works well, that one not.
33.
Now, how to... 33 is a Murchison meteorite. which is a speculation again that perhaps a Murchison meteorite brought the life from whatever, from Mars or from space, and the life actually started outside. In which case, those amino acids which are found in Murchison meteorite may represent the first amino acids of life. So there is a yield of these amino acids in Murchison meteorite. You could rank them and put that as a criterion. Yeah? No. Which of 20 known amino acids appeared first? That's an exact question I'm trying to ask.
What matters if it just appears and then disintegrated, then
it wouldn't matter? It may. It may. I don't know. You see, every opinion would be very complex. One starts with primordial up to before the triplet code. These considerations are completely different. One starts down in the ocean. In vents. Another one starts in interplanetary space. So all different, but they all answer the same question. If when life started, it started with the following amino acids in that order. So I'm interested now only in the order, irrespective of all the rest.
If you keep too
random. After all, the life perhaps is one.
All of these models present at some concentration, maybe 1 picogram.
Yes. I don't know the concentration, and I'm not asking what concentrations are there. I'm asking what is order, chronological order. I'm not asking what time. I'm asking only ranking. Yes?
Why is that question important? Just the order.
Well, you'll see in the rest of the development.
If you take two random of these theories, what's the correlation? I mean, are they sort of being vastly...
They all intercorrelate, about 70% of them intercorrelate with average positive correlation 0.1. So let's not argue about this or another theory. Give them equal weight, except some filtering should be done. Because, for example, there are several criteria of chemical complexity. They're different, but they correlate. The respective rankings correlate. Essentially, it's the same measure, so we combine them together. This way, we get 36 independent criteria. So, but first, what these 44 show? Each one gives a vector saying A was first, E was second, V was third, and so forth. Some with poor resolution. That group was first, and that group was first, and that group was last. So those with poor resolution, I combine them in group, giving the same rank. In other words, you get 44 vectors from 1 to 20, ordering the amino acids according to the speculated chronology. And what I want to do now is, I'm not to establish what was the chronology. I just want to establish the consensus. What they all agree about, yeah?
And how do you rank nulls? For instance, I suspect in the Murchison meteorite there isn't any triplet. Maybe I'm wrong.
I put them last.
Okay.
What else?
These clusters.
Murchison, I forgot, 20-some, yeah?
30. So these big clusters are...
Like that could be Murchison. There's four, and they, all the rest is one group. So now, if you watch, stare at these vectors, you see right away that, for example, glycin, although scattered all around and coming even to the bottom, is still primarily on the left side, right? While tryptophan, again, although scattered and reaching sometimes quite to the left, is primarily on the right side. So let's average. And then you get the consensus chronology of amino acids. This scatter is not a scatter in the distribution. It is accuracy of calculating the mean. So although the error bar is pretty large, there is no way to put together glycine alanine with, say, tyrosine and tryptophan. And on the other hand, some are actually indistinguishable, like asparagine, arginine, isoleucine, and lysine within the error bar, just the same. So I'm putting them in the suggested order, irrespective of the error bar. What else I could do? Otherwise, it would be tricking. First dramatic observation. Those amino acids which belong to Miller's mix, are on the top of the list. This is very non-trivial observation. I tell you why. Because if you even take out the Miller's criteria, since this is filtered, then you have to take out only one. The several criteria combine, all talking the same thing about Miller. So if you subtract that criterion from calculation, you still get the same order. Besides, having already 44 criteria, it doesn't really matter. Now big numbers start to play. Whatever you put there, you don't change the picture, yeah?
I'm a little bit confused with using all kinds of criteria.
Yeah.
Suppose now I introduce the following criteria. I list them in the alphabetic order in different languages. It's crucial, in different languages. 40 different languages. I will have
one
criteria which will clearly change this sequence.
Fantastic.
What I
sure. If the editor will pass that paper to the print, I will incorporate it.
I have
no other criteria than accepted for publication. I have no other criteria. Because many of them are stupid, I would never accept them for publication. But they did appear. Yeah. You could play with this ranking any way you wish. Add more criteria. If you suggest, and if they are, for some reason, you convince me that these are reasonable, make sense, then... Alphabetical doesn't make sense. You'll see it soon. Yeah?
There does seem to be the one artifact that I can imagine if I come out with a listing of amino acids, someone else comes up with a separate list, they submit it to a publication, I'm a reviewer, I look at it and say, oh, this
I like
must
it.
Be wrong, it goes against my
right.
list.
Right, that's right. Well, I'll tell you, this iconoclastic contributions are about 20% to the table. About 20% of criteria are outrageously different.
Miller was one of the earlier ones, right? I mean, since Miller might have been one of the earlier ones, is there a way to distinguish between historical artifacts?
There is a way. And surely this chronology is biased. For example, biased by the influence of Crick's theory, biased by Eigen's theory, biased by Wong's theory, very good co-evolution theory, biased by Miller's experiment. So that, for example, somebody coming with a certain scheme is shy to publish it because it's too different from these. So automatically, he supports the the consensus theory is accepted by public. And I'm after consensus. Still, of course, if we now compare that consensus with a true unknown, maybe it's pretty different. But I don't see the way to come any closer to truth than a consensus of modern knowledge, as many as 44 different criteria. So, Miller, if you exclude the Miller's data from the analysis, you still get the same order, which means that if Miller wouldn't do his experiment till now, that chronology would predict the result. That is what is fundamental about, at least promising about this chronology. Now, this chronology also suggests that indeed amino acids appeared in a certain order, and therefore sometime early in life there were only few amino acids present. So if we would only be able to collect those ancient proteins and look to their composition, unfortunately, modern proteins are all of the same age. They may represent a very ancient form which didn't change much, but they live the same time. We can't call them ancient. The only way to figure out what was the composition of ancient proteins is to take, say, those kingdoms which are separated long time ago, like prokaryotes and eukaryotes, take those enzymes which have a sequence similarity, align the sequences, look what is matching, and see what is the composition of what is matching. Roughly speaking, if bacteria and animals, whatever, separated at the time when only glycine, alanine, valine, and aspartic were present, then in this common part after alignment, we would see only these four amino acids. So this is the idea of the next calculation, which I made. And here is the result of this calculation. This is a histogram of occurrence of various amino acids in prokaryotes. This is in eukaryotes. And this is a common part. Very different distribution. First of all, notice this step. This step says, perhaps, that actually these amino acids were not present at all at that time, and it's only error of my calculation. One could imagine that only this on the left were present at that time. It's just suggesting it's not yet proving. Another thing is glycine, alanine, valine, and aspartic on the top, leucine interferes. If you plot the now dependence of the ranks of the consensus chronology and of composition of prokaryotic, eukaryotic ancestor proteins, you get pretty good correlation. Actually, of all 44 criteria, none matches that good correlation. It's over 0.6 correlation coefficient.
What's
I repeat, I take like-named enzymes from bacteria and animals. I align the sequences, and I take only matching residues. So assuming that these matching residues come from the ancestor, they didn't change. Assuming, it's assumption, yeah?
Compared with what you would expect at random, given the proportion of
right.
Glycine. Is the y-axis the first method or the second method?
This is consensus, which I showed you.
Y-axis.
Yes, and this is simply order of the same amino acids in the composition of common part of
okay,
prox
so
and eukes.
In other words, if half my amino acids were
yeah.
alanine, then I would expect half.
No, the I'm talking only ranking. Only ranking. That is, unexpectedly, this approach, without giving actual time or actual composition, is working very successfully. You'll see it later.
Mm-hmm.
Just order, in which order they appear. Yeah?
What's the correlation between bulk sequence composition and your consensus chronology?
If that one is 0.6, then others would be 0.5, 0.45. The prokaryote and eukaryote, yeah?
What is the correlation of frequency of the codons and your concentrated amino acids?
No, that I didn't analyze. That would be too much of a detail.
Yeah, what I'm wondering about, I mean, the reason I'm wondering about this is because if I were making proteins biologically, I would expect that the cell would be more likely to use simple amino acids rather than complicated amino acids.
Yeah.
So that at random, you would expect to have more pairs of aligned simple amino acids just in terms of metabolic processes
and right.
things like that. And that's very correlated with consensus chronology.
That's right.
Yeah, so
that's right. It's expected. That's right. It's expected. So the striking thing is anomalous behavior of glycine. Glycine and alanine are on the top of the chronology, and yet glycine shows as much as 14% in a composition of that common part. That is, the ancient protein 3.5 billion years back was 14% rich in glycine, according to that assumption. Today, it's about 8%. That suggests that we could use the glycine content of common part for dating, like carbon dating. And let's try then to build the tree of major kingdoms by simply calculating the glycine in the common part. So I did that. And here's a tree which says, note that this is rooted tree because it's a carbon dating, it's glycine dating. The more glycine we have, the earlier the separation happened. So the earliest separation from the rest was L bacteria. The next separation at the level of about 12% of glycine were archaea. Next separation at the level about 10% Protoctista, these are single cellular. And finally, trifurcation at about 8.5% of plants, animals, and fungi. Now, in what relation to reality that tree is, let's compare it with consensus view of cellular evolution by Doolittle in 97. These are all major bifurcations and trifurcations, and these are our data. It's the same tree, essentially.
Wait, I don't understand. In order to do this, you have to know the proportion of glycine at the splitting point of the ancestral protein.
So I assume that a given bacteria and a given animal split at the same time in 3.5 billion years as any other bacteria from any other animal.
I still don't understand. In other words, you have, are you looking at the match locations with your glycine and asking what?
Not locations. I'm just looking for the match. Which residues match? Composition of matching residues. That's right, exactly. If you like, the oldest in that scheme so far, according to my limited RASA calculations, the oldest would be chloroplasts, which are here. They separated seemingly first from all the rest. Chloroplasts or their predecessors, their bacterial predecessors. I could use any, but then I'll be criticized that I biased my collection. So I just took a literature. I'm literature monger. I get across alignment. I just take that alignment as it is and put it, irrespective of technique or whatever. Since two different kingdoms are compared, I just take this score, and this way I accumulated over 700 proteins, and it still slowly accumulates.
Compositional bias is the only thing that's going to filter through 3 billion years of evolution, but there's
functional or structural bias with Weiss here too. That's right. Structural and functional are included in the criteria. Composition was only one of few examples I gave. I can't list all 44. I also didn't expect to see anything, but I do.
I would have expected to see something, but I would have expected to see the latter, the structural and functional biases. And I don't see how you can see a compositional bias reflecting original chronology.
Well, let's leave it for extended discussion and go ahead, because I feel I will not fit. So now let's take a next bold step. Yeah. Let's now to reconstruct the codons. That would be much more difficult. 44 criteria would be not enough because we have 64 codons. and we have to assume something. And I did assume the same thing which was assumed in 78 by Eigen and Schuster. They were first to notice that alanine and glycine are encoded by the most stable triplet pair of GGC for glycine and GCC for alanine. This codon-anticodon would make the most stable short duplex of three letters. You could calculate the stabilities, all the values for enthalpies are known. So, what if that principle worked during the evolution of the code, or at least the early evolution of the code? That is, thermostable were taken first. So, we have our 20 amino acids in the chronology order. Let's take now the most stable triplet of respective codon repertoires, put it on the diagonal, and see how the picture would look like. And the picture looks like that. These are the most stable triplets of every repertoire for every of these amino acids. This is chronological order calculated. Let's put now the complementary ones, because Eigen and Schuster speculated that complementary ones would appear simultaneously. The codons would appear as complementary pairs. So if you now put complementaries, you discover that all complementaries are on the left. All complementaries are on the left. This is a striking triangular shape of the diagram. It's very much suggesting. Well, the little exception here is within the error bar, because order between proline and leucine is less than one-third of standard deviation difference between them. So the diagonal order here is strict, and triangular shape is strict. Now, coming to alphabetical. If we take a different chronological order, for example, alphabetical, you get it this way. In other words, this triangularity is a fundamental observation. You get it only with this chronology. This gives that chronology of amino acids much of credibility. Now, you get most fundamental principles of molecular biology: thermostability, complementarity, and now this triangularity, which simply means that every new triplet originates from a previous one, mostly by a wobble mutation in the third position, GIG to GIA, and then complementary copying to UUC. And each one is done this way, except for very first pair of GUC, which is perhaps a transition from GCC, or GAC, which is perhaps transition from GGC. So they coming in complementary pairs in the order of their stability, stable first. In every repertoire, the stablest are first. So we could use now these principles to reconstruct a whole table. is a speculation, but this is reconstruction on four basic principles, rules. First rule, established chronology of amino acids. Second, thermostability of Eigenschuster, complementarity of Eigenschuster, and processivity, that is, new codons appear by cheapest possible mutational way from already existing triplets. Now this table, now I have to go fast, or I interrupt here, because there is quite a couple of statements in front. Be patient, I make the statements and then we'll leave it for discussion. So one of the major characteristics of this table is complementarity. That is, a codon table could be presented in the form of complementary pairs, so that in upper lines here you have purines in the middle, as well as here, adenine, purines in the middle. In the second line, you always have pyrimidines in the middle, complementary triplets, C or U. So that you could now edit this table by moving odd and even lines, and you get two tables with purines in the middle and pyrimidines in the middle, generating completely different two alphabets. The only common is serine, so ignore it. Two completely independent alphabets. What is remarkable about these alphabets? That these letters are primarily charged or polar, while these ones are primarily hydrophobic, with marginal exceptions. That means that if you look at the codon table, in the reconstructed codon table, you see that glycine and alanine are on the top. Therefore, the first proteins were glycine, 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 alanine, alanine, alanine. Then the purine central triplets of that strand, of glycine strand, mutated to these amino acids, while a complementary strand mutated to these amino acids, and we have two different alphabets for two different complementary strands of the messenger RNA duplexes. When they split and operated like separate genes, of course the first genes were very short, but then they had to fuse. You got a mosaic of two alphabets. To make the story short, if there was a mosaic of two alphabets, then first, what is the size of the mosaic element? What is the size of the very first peptides existing? They couldn't be long because they wouldn't be dissolved. To be soluble, they have to be of length up to 8. They couldn't be short because then respective RNA duplexes would be too short and they will melt. This estimate gives you at least 3 amino acids. So from 3 to 8 amino acids, that would be expected size of a mosaic element. No time for questions, I'm sorry. Let's leave the questions to discussion. Now, I have reasons to believe that this mosaic element was mosaic picture after fusion was primarily alternating. There are reasons. A simple one is too long a hydrophobic is no good, too long a hydrophilic is no good, philic is no good. So most frequent motif would be alternation. What if we still have this alternation in modern sequences? Alternation of two alphabets. Despite billions of years of mutations, we do see this alternation. If you take one gene, you don't see it. If you take 100 genes, you don't see it. If you take 1,000 genes, 1,000 proteins, you still don't see it. When you take a whole genome, complete bacterial genome, you do see that. In most of genomes, you do see that. So I show you the picture for total of 23 genomes. This is autocorrelation of alanine alphabet against alanine alphabet itself. Now, this oscillation is trivial. It's an oscillation with a period 3.5, which is a period of alpha helices, alpha helices roughly are alternation of hydrophobic hydrophilic with a period 3.5. So if you smooth it by 7, you kill this oscillation. And the smoothed curve is shown here. And it says first minimum at 6, maximum at 12, minimum at about 19. Similarly, you make a cross correlation between alanine and glycine alphabets, and you get maximum at 6, minimum at 12, and next maximum at about 19. In other words, about 6.3 is the hidden periodicity oscillating between these two alphabets. And since we expected that, we predicted that, I consider now the speculation confirmed. The very first, the shortest protein was of two kinds, of two alphabets. It had a size of about 6 units. And that is the first stage in evolution of the protein. Second stage is about polymer statistics, ring closure of chains. And the third stage, protein chains. And the third stage is due to apparently ring closure of DNA molecules. But that is separate and very big subject. And here are the conclusions that we build a consensus amino acid chronology, which has a credibility because it shows that amino acids of Miller's were first. It also suggests a glycine clock, which works. Now, it allowed to build a codon chronology with basic simple properties of thermostability, complementarity, and processivity, from which we were able to predict the short mosaic elements of earliest proteins, two alphabet mosaic of 6 amino acid units, which we confirmed. Thank you.